Welcome to Take Notes. This is the 209th episode of this podcast. I'm here with Adam. Hello, Adam.
Hello, Ted. You know, the episode is starting when my dryer dings a little song in the background just as we start recording. Ding, dong, ding, dong, ding, ding.
I was in a practice session for a big meeting we have next week at work. We were in a particular conference room. People kind of go and chit-chat, and all of a sudden, I look up, like, and everybody else looks up, because these fancy people are coming to campus. And one of my colleagues says, I'm going to figure that out. So. Well, every episode, we do ask each other, what do you got? It's a prompt. It's a way to say, listen, I know you carry a notebook around with you, and I know I carry a notebook around with me, and I try to write stuff down, and I know you try to write stuff down, too. Observations from life, things that capture your attention. Called What Do You Got? What Do You Got, Adam?
All right, Ted. A couple ladies walking down the street. A couple young ladies walking down the street. And one of them says to the other, she goes, my cousin is one of, like, you know, those, like, really mean cheerleaders. And she, like, hates my grandma. And I asked my wife to hold my coffee for a second so I could write it down.
Yeah, you got to. Mm-hmm. You need help sometimes.
That's right. What do you got?
This is just a quote from The New Yorker, which is kind of easy pickings, but it's been that sort of a week. Al Pacino, from his essay in The New Yorker, said, we were on the prowl, hungry for life. Talking about himself as a young man roaming the streets of the Bronx. I present this What Do You Got as a recommendation to read the essay, because it's really great.
Yeah, I kept almost reading it. Is it great?
Oh, it's great. It's, you know, you can read it in his voice in your head if you want, but it's just very, you know, interesting memoir of the sort of, like, of the type where you're like, this person's not trying, they're not trying to tell just one story, you know. They sat down and kind of just are meandering through their early years and throwing out what they remember and what's interesting, you know, those stories you tell yourself a million times, and then you just write it down, because then it's very familiar. It's just, yeah, it's really good.
I'm going to have to get it out. You know, I subscribed after we did the summer fiction episode of the show. And man, that quality journalism just really piles up.
It sure does. There sure is a lot of it. But you know that going in at this point, yep, in our lives, we know that's part of the deal. What do you got, Adam?
All right, I got one more. This one, you know, this one can kind of be a dialogue in a way. But the question I want to ask you is: are people with bumper stickers trying to start a conversation? For example, at Wiley's table, at Wiley's tennis lesson, there's a woman getting out of her car with a bumper sticker that says, read more books. Now, Wiley and I love books a lot more than we love tennis. But if I were to ask her which books she recommends I read, I know that I'm the weirdo, right?
Yeah, she'll call the police.
Exactly. So yeah,
she'll have you thrown out of that tennis club.
So you would agree the bumper sticker is very one-sided. Nobody wants to have a dialogue.
I have many, many bumper stickers on my car.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have so many that it's clear that I just like them and that I don't have an agenda, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I got so much going on.
You're into adhesive.
I truly enjoy being a person with a lot of bumper stickers. I think it's a little egotistical. It's a little, you know, it's a public display. But I mean, I don't like having conversations with people, so I can honestly say that I do not have those bumper stickers to start conversations with people. Rarely does it result in a conversation, and when someone makes reference to it, I'm often confused as to what they're talking about. But there's a passive enjoyment I take in, I don't know, just whatever that is. Maybe it's a little latent narcissism that's not enough for me just to drive a car around. I do avoid, what I avoid are bumper stickers that tell you what to do.
Like read more books.
Yeah, although I think I have a bumper sticker that says read more books. But it's not very legible. It's a small sticker. And it is from Main Street Books in Davidson, North Carolina.
So I went to a bumper sticker store once and I got a read more bumper stickers bumper sticker.
Well, we have a little special project this evening that we're going to see how it goes, I think.
Yeah, I think if it goes well, I'll take credit. And if it's a snooze fest, I'll say it was your idea.
Well, if it's a snooze fest, you can write me an email about it. Because that's what we're doing. This was Adam's idea. He says to me, let's go back to a week at some distant past time and look at our email.
Yeah. And
to which I responded with the level of perplexity that our listening audience is probably experiencing right now. But I've learned to kind of follow the trail after all these years of podcasting together. And now I'm going to stop talking and see if Adam can reasonably fill the empty space of air that will be left behind. Not off
okay.
to a good start.
I know. I was doing it on purpose.
Okay, good.
Well, okay. So, right, we were texting, as you do in the 2020s, about our various online storage spaces overflowing and having to either clean up your Google storage and your Gmail and your photos, or your get bigger Apple storage, whatever you got to do. And
storage anxiety.
Yeah, it was storage anxiety.
The current variety.
And you had assumed that I was somehow free from this, and I sent you a screenshot and told you that my Gmail, my personal Gmail, is like constantly at 96% or 97% full, and I refuse to bump that up because I feel like, they told us they were always going to give us more Gmail. That's when it started. Gmail was always growing, so I feel like, much like when. Something from L.L. Bean that I bought 20 years ago has a hole in it. I'm like, wait, they had a lifetime. No, anyway. So I started thinking about whether there was anything interesting about email, and whether kind of tending the email garden could be interesting and what we might find. And I did cook up this idea that like maybe it would be good to clean your email 1 week at a time. And then I thought, because Gmail like can let you just view a week, and then I thought it should just be a random week, and I figured that looking at your older email was probably easier to clean up than your newer email. And then I wondered if it would be interesting what we found in our email. So that's kind of how it started.
Well, I didn't even take the idea of cleaning it up as part of that, because why would I do such a thing? I mean,
right.
Am I a Google subscriber with 2 terabytes of space that allows me to sleep well at night? Yes.
Would it be possible for me to move some of my stuff to your...
onto
one of your spare terabytes? So I said, let's do a random week in a random year.
Yeah.
And then I think I honed it a little bit, right? I don't think I just did the first thing that came up, because it was probably like, first it was like 2 weeks ago, and then it was like the first 2 weeks of Gmail. And I landed...
Yeah.
Like the last week of March in 2014, about 10 years ago. And then I thought that was kind of cool, because it's roughly halfway between when Gmail was first made available and now. And so it's like the middle of Gmail. So it's kind of taking stock of our own email and taking stock of email at the midway point.
Yeah. Well, it was good that you provided a constraint, a block of time. So I kind of just did the little search function and just sat for a minute to see what even appeared, like a week of Gmail in March 2014, like how many emails is that even? Like a question like that is kind of, you don't know the answer to until you do it. Well, it turns out for me it's about 87 emails.
Nice.
Is that a lot? Is that a little? I don't know. Didn't feel like that many at the end of the day.
That feels like a lot to me, but I think I may have already pruned my, I may have previously pruned that email garden, because I'm, you know, always at 96 or 97%.
You've got more of a Victorian email garden, whereas I'm more of a native plant kind That's of right. guy. Well, a few of my observations, kind of high level observations. Firstly, I would say that before we started this podcast, we would email ourselves what I would consider what is now a what do you got.
Like, nice.
Like, you know, fun little observations, pithy quips that we overheard and had to share with somebody because that's a human impulse and probably at work or I don't know if I've ever emailed from my phone all that much, although I probably have. So that I realized that a lot of this energy, a lot of this podcast energy was Gmail energy in 2014.
There's probably a thing where you and I actually avoid emailing now because we think we save it for the show.
Oh, exactly. Yes, yeah. Yes. Oh, that was utter. I was like, this is why am I wasting all this gold right here? Because that's how everybody who listens to this show thinks of this. It's just pure gold.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of it was going into email. Now that's with you and I emailing. The other experience I had was that when you take a block like this, you know, it's kind of a slice. It's a sliver that you then have to investigate. And in certain situations, even when they were very specific life events, I had to kind of be a detective of my own life a little bit and figure out what an email chain was even talking about when, because it was in medias res or everything was assumed. Like, for example, this was prime potty training for my older kid. So there's an email telling my mom how to navigate a babysitting session in the particular stage of potty training that we were in. Took down a note that my daughter pulled off a quote big old poopy straight into the potty yesterday evening, for example. So it transported me back to that time, but I didn't remember it was that time. You sort of become your own biographer a little bit.
Yeah, it's so along those lines. So I was pretty interested in actually like just the little things that mean nothing to me now and how much of that there was in the email. But along the lines of what you're saying, that what it really brought me back to, the most revelatory thing was that 10 years ago was a brief period of time where I had become, not a high-level sports gambler, but like king of the office pool, whatever the office pool was, by paying a little attention.
You were big on that office pool.
I was, and I would win a lot, these office pools. It didn't matter, NCAA, NFL. So there was an email where you were asking me for my bracket, and I was like, why the f*** is Ted asking? Oh, that's right.
I was king of the pools.
And then I gave it all up just like that. Like, I was like, I knew when to quit. That was that. And then like the what do you got thing that I found that was you digging out a Google user review of a thrift store in town and how ridiculous some thrift store was. So that was, that was the good stuff. I actually felt
What's fun is that I found that same email, obviously, because we're looking in the same
block.
And so you and I were both re-experiencing that same email in our own little sectors.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, along the same lines as forgetting the office bracket time in my life, there was this expensive plumbing receipt. And when we moved into our house, like, they just hadn't warned us that we needed clean the tree roots out of our, we need to have the pipe rotted, otherwise the water wouldn't drain. And so it had happened a couple times. Like the first people that came out when our basement flooded didn't do a good job, and so there was like the expensive plumbing receipt and the video of the thing, and it was kind of like, that was a very painful time, and it's not like I've forgotten that. I'm still live in fear of water. from that. But it was actually nice. Like, it was like a these things shall pass sort of thing. Like, yeah. I wasn't, you know, I was like, oh, yeah, that time, all those times, and how long that seemed, and how much it went on and on and on. But the thing I did, I was actually surprised that even 10 years ago, there was, like, so much junk. And so just these were emails from what I consider, like, old brands. They probably all still, they don't all still exist. But I used to get a lot of emails from these companies that I don't think we really talk about anymore. Mint.com, Foursquare, Zinio, and U.S. Airways. And then also some YouTube account I followed who posted videos of him playing old records, like in the record would spin, which I always thought was the coolest thing, and I wonder if I ever made it all the way to the end of one of them.
I still like that idea.
I like the idea, too. I like the idea. I do, in theory. Yeah.
Well, that was a gateway to what would become, like, DJ YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just hour-long DJ sets and stuff, which is prevalent now. Yeah. It's funny, I don't have any junk mail in this search that I did. I wonder if Gmail is filtering those out.
You probably did a good job. I think the other thing that I've learned is that you are probably the type of person who can trash your junk mail, like when you receive it.
I can trash it, but I don't get to it. I'm impressed that I got to it. Do you like to
keep it? Well, it's gone.
Like some.
No, I don't like to keep it, but I can't do what I've learned is this is a silly trip down memory lane, but for our listeners, if you have this problem, just go 1 week at a time, because it's very easy to just trash the stuff that's from the past, right? Like the junk from the trash that you just can't even believe you've held on to. That's a lot easier. But I still have a very hard time staying on top of all the junk, and there's so much of it in the email that I get now. You know, I'm just mostly deleting emails. I had to change the settings on my Gmail app to make it easier to delete them. I just swipe to delete. That's all I'm doing every day on Gmail. Swipe.
You got carpal tunnel syndrome.
Swipe. It's mostly when we're podcasting. It's the only time I get to to clean up my email. just kidding.
Speaking of detective work on my own life kind of thing.
Yeah.
I read one email in which it was an email with my wife. I said, just printed out tickets to Grandy Booty. And I'm reading this now thinking I don't have a clue what I was talking about there. And I was very excited, so you'd think I would remember it.
Yeah.
A few emails down, it's a receipt from the movie theater, a showing of Grand Budapest Hotel.
Nice.
If you want to cause high levels of what the kids call cringe these days, go through and read your old emails and what you called things that you were excited about at the time.
Well, I also, on that note, have an email on the Wes Anderzine that were part of.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that exists on the internet at all anymore.
That was a nice. That was a zine that I can't even remember how I learned about it. Maybe it was on Tumblr, which Tumblr played a more something of a role, and even in 2014. But it's this little zine. I see it here on Kickstarter. That must be where it bounced around.
Okay.
Wow. He raised £1,600. But I submitted to it. And a nice little story, and it got published, and this guy put out a really nice little zine called the Wes Anderzine, which is inspired by Wes Anderson. I love that project. I think it's in my archives somewhere. Really nice. Really appreciated that.
Yeah.
There you go. That was there. I'd totally forgotten about that.
And then, from just the little bit of stationary content from them that just a little trip back in time, is that's when the Shelterwood field notes were announced.
Yeah.
I think.
Yep.
Yeah. So I had that too. And you
made reference to the Facebook group even back then. So that must have been active even before we were creating podcasts.
Yeah.
was a good addition, the shelter wood.
It was. Feels like they can never do that again. Like, just too complicated.
Probably. Probably kick themselves for it. What do you, in reading back and, like, trying to sort of characterize your email usage, how do you feel that you were using it then in your life? Like, what space did it occupy? What creative space?
Well, I think what I noticed, because I think I found in that 1 week was that, like, that 1 week I seemed to not be busy at work. And so in that 1 week, I would be the one sending emails to you and, you know, former co-host of our Richard Linklater offshoot podcast that only had one episode, Dan Kugler. And then so I was curious, was it always like that? Was I always the one, you know, like just like pummeling people's emails in box? I was a little worried about it. And then you go, so I'd look just like the next week or the week before, and it'd be very different. Like, that must have been the week I was busy. And instead, you or Dan or somebody, usually you or Dan, were, you know, you guys were the ones sending out lots of stuff. And so I found that interesting. I found like it was like, actually, it felt like a reaching out. It felt like, okay, if I'm keeping quiet, like my friends are going to send me an email. But if they get an email from me, then they're gonna be the ones reacting to it. So, you know, it wasn't like this was super revelatory, but it did, as you'd kind of expect, like more connection via email 10 years ago. And if I went 10 years back to the beginning of my Google inbox, probably even more connection than that.
Maybe.
But like you said, we have this podcast, you know, and that's just sort of a different version of connection. I expected some big aha moment. I expected, man, email was so much better 10 years ago.
So in reading it, I wrote it down, this feeling that I wrote, these email chains feel like texts. Like, it's like we still communicate the same way digitally, I would say. They're just, the messages are dispersed. There might be the one friend who, for whatever reason, we communicate through Instagram messaging because he likes to send me trolling Duke men's basketball posts because he knows I don't like college basketball. And then we have fun exchanges there. But the messages are pretty similar, a sentence at a time, something funny, trying to make a joke, trying to be funny, and then, you know, kind of throwing the ball back. Like, the emails, this is not as though we were penning 12 paragraph long messages that were reflective and, you know, like by the firelight. Like, this isn't a different age of messaging. The messages were similar. It's just there's a wider array of vehicles now to send essentially the same messages.
Do you save all your old text messages?
How would I even, they are, whatever, wherever they are, they're in my phone like a normal human. I have no idea if I save them. I don't.
Oh, so mine expire. Or they used to. I don't know if they still do. But like at some point when phone storage was an issue, I'd be like, why do I need all these old texts? And there was a setting that I think it's still there on the iPhone where they expire after a month or something. Well, then they delete.
In its own way, is kind of fascinating.
Next week, we'll take a look at our text messages from. I got to do it 1 week in the last month, though, because my next.
If you said to me, "Go find old text messages," I'd rather poke my own eyes out. Just from the interface, just the interface of it.
Yeah.
And you know, as you mention it, an email requires you to do a subject header. You're either replying to another message or you're starting a new one. Texting, this is a good point. It's a nonstop river of exchange that doesn't begin or end. It's just one ongoing conversation.
Yes. In order,
there could be a month in between the messages, but they in the interface they appear as if they happened in one stream, which is odd in its way.
And there's some obligation to respond to the last one, too, because just before we started recording, I wished a friend a happy early birthday. And in the Messages app, I had these photos that I had decided not to send. I downloaded someone else's photos from the Pulp show. And I had decided not to send them because why did I need to do it? But it was still there. I hadn't deleted it all. I just like walked away from it. And so for me, at least, I guess I still couldn't just delete it. I had to send the photos. Like, it seemed like a decent idea a few days later. I had to send the photos, explain that I meant to send it the other day, and then also wish them a happy early birthday. And so it's
well,
the one thing
point,
about email was like
was
you could just choose to
birthday.
Start a, yeah, you could just in email you can just choose to start a whole new thing.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
I think that was, you know, I wrote this down too as I was undertaking this project. Why and when does an email chain stop? And it was almost like a philosophical question, like when a chain stops, it stops. And somebody either start a new one or you know, whatever, time goes by. But a text has no stop or start. So you could say, or you could kind of ponder, like when you find one email with no reply, there's something kind of weird and sad about that. Or even if you send an email that's meant to be funny and someone just writes one reply that's kind of non-committal and it just sort of ends, I don't, maybe it's a kind of built-in litmus test of the of the entertainment value of the email or something.
Yeah, or even like you could write something, let's just stipulate it's normally what you've suggested, but you could also write something like really thought-provoking that maybe is going to require the other person to think about how they're going to reply, and that's probably or maybe never going to happen, right? Or you could write something really lengthy, and then someone feels the need to, you know, meet you where you are and give you a lengthy reply. That, you know, that's never going to happen too.
One thing I like about, you know, I think we tend to think of email as being longer form. My work email certainly is. But, you know, the idea, like when you read correspondence from the olden days and the first like 30% of every letter is the person apologizing that they didn't write sooner and telling you all the reasons why they couldn't write and, you know, this and that and this. It's like the most universal component of hand letter writing.
Yep.
I enjoy that email is devoid of that kind of hand wringing, over apologizing, guilt ridden. Like it's still a longer format, but we managed to exercise the kind of apologia that was in the DNA of old fashioned letter writing.
You have inspired me to find an old email that I never replied to. Like one of those that came to me and I let it just sit there like a stone in the river. I don't know. Yeah. And I'm going to just reply to it. I'll send somebody a thoughtful reply.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Now that's a project. Listeners, you can do that at home. Find an email from the last week of March 2014 and reply to it. Now, I interact with most of the people that I emailed regularly with at that point. I would say there's a couple folks where I've legitimately don't really communicate with them that much anymore, but I could happily send. There's an email that I couldn't send. But for the most part, like that would work out all right, which is kind of cool.
Could you email the wine party people?
Oh man, Sonoma out in Napa.
Yeah, for years you got invited to a wine party by people you got no idea who. I mean, except that their name and address was on all of it, but you didn't know who they were.
I could have legitimately appeared at their wine, their spring wine party or whatever. It was in Napa. It was like Barb and Joe were back at it again with like some clip art, like, come on by, just bring yourselves.
And you know what's funny?
Never had
about
any
it?
Idea how, where that came from.
That happens to us almost daily now, where you get a text message from someone.
Oh, yeah.
Looking for, you know, claiming to be Barb and Joe, looking for Jim. And then if you reply that you're not Jim, you're Ted, they're going to start some sort of complicated romance scam and try to get you to invest in cryptocurrency.
It was simpler times.
It was simpler times.
Barb and Jim could send an errant email, and you knew that they were, it was coming from the heart, and you probably actually could show up, and it would go viral, and the world would have been a better place. That was an era. You had your pool mastery era, and I had my Barb and Jim getting invited to the party every week era. This has been a fun project. I think I got a lot out of this. I didn't know what was going to happen going into it, or even what you were talking about. But I feel like we tended to our gardens, and I feel pretty good about that.
Me too. And we've got our little projects. We can go forth. We can continue to tend to our gardens, or we can, pull some weeds. No, that would still be tending to the gardens. But we can grow another flower. Find an email that we never replied to, which in the previous metaphor was a rock. Now it's a flower. Now it's like a dead flower, and we can grow another flower or something. I don't know.
Amazing. You tied that up with a bow. Let's do this again next week. What'd you say?
I will send you an email about it.
You can find us on the internet at takenote.space. You can sign up for our newsletter. We're going to send one of those out shortly. You can support us on Patreon. You'll find a link over there. Thank you very much. Really appreciate that support. It truly boggles my mind and keeps us going. And you can send us an email at takenotecentral@gmail.com.
People should definitely send us an email in response to this episode. It'd be weird if they didn't.
It would make sense.